Hey there, what's up? Welcome to the Checkout Podcast, and it's hosted on our homepage at wbgo.org, 88.3 FM in Newark. Well, the election seems to be racing towards us. Hopefully you've planned your vote. As for this program, The Checkout, I try to amplify some of the voices that I think we need to hear today, like right now, as we can all hope and envision a brighter future. And one of those exciting voices that I'm thrilled to share with you today is Angel Bat Dawid. She's a musician, really a multi-instrumentalist that's difficult to quantify. However, the clarinet might be her main axe. She's signed to the International Anthem label and has a radiant recording called The Oracle, which we'll be listening to. But she's also just pumping out new works, some that address our troubling times that we find ourselves in today. So she'll take us on her journey, and also she'll give some love to the great Yusef Lateef. She'll also honor Henry Threadgill. Shout out to him for becoming a 2021 NEA Jazz Master. And then a little later in the show, this My Music segment, she talks about her newest multimedia work, Elijah the Prophet, what she calls a myth science sonic visual sermon. Thanks for checking in.
Hello, world, entire planet, universes, galaxies. I am Angel Bat Dawid. I'm Angel Bat Dawid. I am a musician. I love, 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 love music. I play the clarinet. I play piano. I sing. I express myself musically and sonically as best as I possibly can because music is so important to me. You're listening to My Music on The Checkout. I am currently living now in Chicago, Illinois. Here's the story. I was born in Georgia. My parents met in Georgia. My mom's from Macon, Georgia. My father is from Louisville, Kentucky. And my dad was going to Morehouse, met my mom, they got married. And I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. But because my dad is from Kentucky, we moved to Kentucky for a while. And then we also lived overseas. My parents were missionaries. So we lived in Africa for 4 years as a child, came back to Kentucky, didn't get to Chicago area until I was a sophomore in high school, even though I didn't want to do it. You know, I was tired of being the new girl, and it changed my life moving to Chicago. My dad, one time, he called me and my sister in the room, and he was like, okay, y'all, sit on the couch. We thought we were in trouble. I was like, what did we do? I was like, I didn't do nothing. And he looks at us, and he says, okay, you guys. I mean, we had to be like 6 or 7. He's like, okay, you guys, what do you guys want to be when you grow up? Like, what do y'all want to do in life? And we're like, I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. And my sister came all quick. She was like, I want to be a writer. And I looked at her, I was like, how do you know what you want to be already? You know, I was looking at her like, what? And so then I was like, I don't know what I want to be. So I was getting all nervous. And then Michael Jackson popped into my head because we watched a lot of Michael. This is when we lived in Africa. So people would send us these cassette tapes of like concerts and shows because the TV was different in Africa. And so we would watch these Michael Jackson concerts like 24/7. We would watch it rewind because it was VHS and watch it again. And so he popped into my head, and I remember how much I love seeing him perform and sing. And I was like, well, I want to be a musician. My 8-year-old Michael Jackson jam would probably be the Jackson 5 stuff, like A, B, C, you know, Ben, the two of us, we look no more. Oh, my goodness. And I think that was the thing about me as a child. When I saw other children doing anything, I think that's really what gave me the confidence that I could do stuff. Tomorrow, I loved Annie as a little girl. I was obsessed with Annie, the musical, because it was like little girls like me, you know, dancing and singing. I'm like, wow, I could do that too. I didn't know. Or Amadeus, which is another great film that I credit as like me getting into music, was the film Amadeus and Mozart. That's how I started thinking the clarinet was wrong, because I thought it was a goofy instrument at first. I was like, I don't want to play the clarinet. You know, I wanted to play the violin. You know, and the reason I wanted to play violin is because I saw Amadeus, and there's a point in the movie where Amadeus is a little boy and he plays the violin. Then he plays the piano. I was like, oh my goodness, you can play multiple instruments. And so it was like always my dream to be able to be like that.
Trumpets in D, tonic and dominant, first and third beats. It goes with the harmony.
That composer scene, that scene where Salieri's writing, that's why I always wanted to be a composer, because of that scene. I was like, I want to be able to do that one day. Just be like, da da da, and be able to write it, you know? Yeah. And to be in that place feels good, because that's living a dream of mine.
Yes, I understand. Yes, yes.
I'm a strong Black woman, the product of a strong Black family. So we know that what happens in this world is that a lot of people don't look at us that way. And so this is the anthem for everyone to start saying that affirmation. The Black family is the strongest institution in the world. This is not about I'm better than you. No, this is about raising up your family, because the Black family is your family. It is the original family. Our original mothers were Black women in Africa for everyone on the planet. So let's give them some honor, because we all come from the Black family. It's not nothing other. It is you. So let's just play a little bit from Black Family. So let's check out Black Family. This is Angel Bathaweed, and you're listening to my music on the checkout. There's so much great music that comes out of Chicago that I know I wouldn't have been exposed to anywhere else but Chicago. I think what made the most impression on me, from hip hop to blues to gospel, was there's this element of freeness. And there was always this element of experimental and avant-garde. I've coined Chicago myself as the epicenter for improvisation and avant-garde music. What really solidified me as a musician, where I was like, I'm so comfortable in my musicianship, was when I started getting into free jazz. The free jazz scene in Chicago is like one of the best in the world. There's an organization, the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, the AACM. They started in Chicago. They've been around for over 50 years. They were a bunch of black jazz musicians who were like, we love was playing in the clubs, but we want to play some most stuff. We want to play something different. And they started doing all these experimental jazz compositions that went from classical, neoclassical to blues and funk. And they're a great inspiration to me. And when I discovered them and the artists that came from them, like the Art Ensemble of Chicago, Henry Threadgill, Henry Threadgill has a Pulitzer Prize, you know what I mean? That I'm actually able to talk to him and I've met him. I think that's something that is only in Chicago, that you can like be sitting there with world-renowned musicians and they will just sit there and talk to you and pass you a bit of knowledge too on top of that, and bless you and support you. And I just feel like that type of family, going back to the black family, is still very strong in the musical black family of Chicago too. Dr. Yusef Lateef was deep. You know, he was doing that audio physio psychic music. That's what he called it. He called it audio physio psychic music. And he got a whole book about it. Like, if you want to learn how to play it, go to his website. He has a whole book called How to Learn Audio Physio Psychic Music. And that's the kind of music I play. There's an album called Blue Lateef. The whole album, Blues Lateef. The whole album is just bananas. One thing that I always loved about Dr. Lateef was that he expanded the idea of jazz from just traditional instruments. He started using African instruments and different things from the Oriental to the East world stuff. So his music was going beyond a genre. It wasn't jazz anymore. It was just music. And he has a really great book that I study from that every instrumentalist should have. It's called The Repository of Scales. It's a thesaurus of repository of scales. And he's got scales from ancient Hebrew scales in there. He even got a scale. He's like, this scale was given to me from Eric Dolphy. He got like an Eric Dolphy scale, a retrograde scale. And it's a collection of different scales that really he made this book so that if you as a composer, you could get different ideas and different, you know, outside of the Western idea of music. Thank you. one of the aspects about my work is there's an ongoing research I've been doing about Black music and that deals with the spirituals. The spirituals was some music that was created by my ancestors who were enslaved in this country. And what they used to do in the middle of the night is they would go out into the woods in the middle of the night. And trust me, this is dangerous because if they get caught, you know, what could happen. And they would have these secret meetings. And within these meetings, they would build these kind of little tabernacles in the woods. They would call them hush harbors. And in those hush harbors would, you know, they would have a service. And during these services, all sorts of things would happen because they were still drawing on the ancient African traditions in the woods. And so things like shouting and yelling and getting happy and your body moving and maybe you'll speak in another tongue. All these things were happening in these little sacred spaces. And from that birthed a form of music called the spirituals. Now, most people have heard about the spirituals and they think it's just coded language. And it is. So that people could like, oh, we're going up north, going over Jordan. You know, they would read the Bible and they would take those verses from the Bible and make their own songs because that was the only thing that they was allowed to read. And so when I'm talking about the spirituals and recreating these hush harbors, I started to think how much music, especially Black music, freed Black people so much. Now Black music, the music that was made by enslaved people, is the music of the world. Like, all Black music comes from the spirituals. Blues, jazz, hip hop, everything come from that. What would happen if I started doing hush harbors today? What kind of other great Black music would come from that? And so essentially when I do any of my shows, even the entire album, The Oracle, is a hush harbor. There's definitely a start, middle, end of the service. And when I do a performance, it always turns into that. When I do a composition, it turns on that because I'm really interested in exploring and experimenting with Black essence. I'm not talking about skin color here. Because you can have a Black person who looks white, but both their parents are Black. You know what I mean? So this is beyond physical stuff. I'm talking about Black essence. What is that? Because there's a certain thing that Black people do that I only hear Black people do. Other people can learn it, of course, but there's this thing.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, yeah, ooh. And see, I can hear the African influence, but I can also hear this other influence. I'm trying to understand sonically, how does that fit right now? And where is it going to the future? And that's when we get into themes about Afrofuturism, which is a term that a lot of people, you know, I don't know if it's a clearly defined term, but I think it's a response term in the fact that, like, media and everyone has really created a future that where Black people don't exist, you know, or there's one or two of us, you know, out of all them Star Wars. You try to tell me Billy Dee Williams is the only Black man who can, you know, or like Uhuru from, you know, Star Trek. You try to tell me shit, that's it. You know, and I know they tried really hard to be diverse, so I'm not hating, but I'm just saying the idea that there's no Black people in the future is kind of perplexing to me. So I'm trying to, you know, you think about technology and the advancements we have in technology and how Black people respond to technology in our world. Are we still in bondage? And I hate to say it, we have a technologically new world. And Black people are still in the same condition as we were when there wasn't this technology. The ins and outs of ups and downs that I've had as a Black woman composer, musician, it's been a lot. I think one of the biggest challenges of being in this position is people taking me seriously. You know, I'm very outgoing and bubbly, and to my credit, look pretty young for my age. But that doesn't mean that this is all just youth and not study and discipline and seriousness and practice, you know. And it does tend to seem that a lot of people don't really believe that a Black woman could, you know how to read music or know how to be a great instrumentalist, you know, or not just be able to sing, because everybody loves for the Black woman to sing. I mean, yes, everybody loves it. I love it too, you know, but it's like most of the time, you know, people are like, are you a dancer or are you a singer? Because it's not in people's mindset yet that you could be a Black woman and play just as good or better than anybody else. So I'm working on making sure that my image is in places that young girls can know that too. You know, like, I didn't have an image of any woman who was a composer when there's millions of women composers and instrumentalists, like millions, who are incredible. And being able to be a light is very important to me for young women, because women are some of the most amazing musicians ever. I have been protesting since ever, because racism exists in the world. So right now, all the singles that I have out in some way are a protest to what I don't like in this world, which is racism. I hate it. I hate it. And I cry and I weep about it every day, or 3 or 4 times a week. I mean, I really cry and weep about it. It's infuriating because I'm just trying to be happy and I cannot be happy in this type of existence. I call it hell. And my definition of hell is a place where you're uncomfortable, you know? And so this world is very uncomfortable for Black people. You know, people are like, well, what are you talking about? Y'all, we got a first Black president. Y'all are free, da 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 da. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the stuff that I have to still see exist because of racism. It's got to stop.
Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse.
We've heard in the news so many horrific stories that are still continually happening to Black people. One of the stories that really touched my heart was the story of Elijah McClain. And I'd heard about the story and I was grieving. So if you remember, Elijah McClain was the story that happened about a young man who was murdered by the police. And he was killed in police custody. And he was only like 140 pounds because I heard so much about him being a musician and he loved to play his violin for cats so they wouldn't feel lonely. And I'm like, how did this young man get into any trouble? He's like the most innocent being. And so when I heard this, you know, of course I was just disgusted and very sick inside. So I went to go look online to get more information and they have the video of the police body cam videos of the entire interaction. I think it was, they cut it down. But they also had video of him at the grocery store where he was buying tea to go home. And they also have video of the 911 call that was made.
What is the address of the emergency?
Okay. And the 911 call was, oh, there's a man walking down the street with a ski mask on. Can you get some police to come here? And to my knowledge, I'm like, when was that illegal? So with the movie, I felt like I was so compelled by it that I was like, I really want to respond sonically to this because my emotions just didn't even know what to do. But I knew like sonically I wanted to do something. And I kept thinking about Elijah the prophet in the Bible. I read the Bible a lot. Bible is great mythology, and one of the myths is that in the last days, when the end of days come, that Elijah, the prophet, would come back, and that's how you would know the end was near, all right? So these are one of the legends, right? And I was like, oh, so I'm a myth scientist, you know, like, and I study this from Sun Ra himself. If you look at a lot of Sun Ra stuff, he always talks about mythology and sciences. You know, if you are a myth, whose reality are you? If you are reality, whose myth are you? And so I always try to experiment in my work with mythology. So I was like, what is the mythology of Elijah? You know, what if he isn't just the young man who plays the violin for kittens? What if he was the prophet Elijah coming back? Because the prophet Elijah never died in the Bible. That's why they said he has to come back and have his death. And so when I looked at it through the lens of Elijah as the prophet and they're persecuting him and killing our prophets, the song by Bob Marley where he said, how long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? And there's just parts of that, you know, when I was watching it, where I was like, I'm not trying to show this video so that people can be triggered and feel bad or sad, but that we can really see what the mythology is telling us about where we are as human beings. Okay, this is where we're at as human beings, y'all. And it's gross and it's disgusting and it's unacceptable and it needs to stop.
Okay, how old is he looking? I know he's wearing a mask. Okay, what color is the mask or what does it look like? Black mask. Okay. Is it like a ski mask?
You don't get to plot and plan his death.
Okay. And then what else is he wearing?
You don't get to kill my brother.
Well, my destination as Angel Badawid has been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey. On the album, that song Destination, I named it after a poem from Dr. Yusef Lateef. He wasn't just a musician, he was a writer. He had tons of novellas and books, and they're all like really crazy science fiction books. So Destination comes from one of his books called Spheres. And I had written and composed the song, and I knew I wanted some text, so I did a little divination, which is mean I just like open up to the first page, and it turned to that poem, Destination. And that's when I was like, okay, this is gonna be the poem that I'm gonna put. This guy had a spaceship, and he was like, Angel, do you want to come on the spaceship and play some music? I was like, I'm never going to turn down an invitation to be on a spaceship and play some music. And that's where that song came from. Then the words were like so appropriate. Destination is the final feeling, is the part that got me, that always gets me. That final feeling, that last thing. That last feeling, what is that, you know? And I think about that on so many metaphysical levels. Like, we're always trying to chase that final feeling.
And thank you, Angel Badawid, for just your candor, your spirit, and personality just jumps out of this podcast, and we appreciate you and your music. And if you want to see Elijah the Prophet, her Myth Science Sonic Visual Sermon, we link to it on our website at wbgo.org. Just please, I urge you to proceed with extreme caution. And hopefully everybody out there is registered to vote or have at least planned their vote on November 3rd. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, check out from WBGO. You can get it on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Music, Google Play. Give us a 5-star review. And we have another podcast you should definitely check out too called Jazz United, hosted by WBGO's Nate Chenin and Greg Bryan.
This is not just a few cops doing things across the country. This is not a good cop versus bad cop situation. This is Ahmaud Arbery being shot down by white men on the streets of Georgia. Breonna Taylor being killed in her home. This is in New York City where we were until freedom. We were just in New York fighting the police officers who, in the name of social distancing, were damn near killing black young people on our streets. This is a coordinated activity happening across this nation. And so we are in a state of emergency. Black people are dying in a state of emergency. We cannot look at this as an isolated incident. The reason why buildings are burning are not just for our brother George Floyd. They're burning down because people here in Minnesota are saying to people in New York, to people in California, to people in Memphis, to people all across this nation, this is America.
The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rentner. Thanks for checking us out.